not a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. For some, the term oxymoron and doublespeak are one and the same. Two examples of oxymorons could be jumbo shrimp and living dead. While the doublespeak terms ethnic cleansing means genocide and neutralize generally means kill someone, then you can have entire sentences, such as when Henry Ford said, "A business that makes nothing but money is a poor business." Sometimes these terms are used to be politically correct, or they can be used to hide negativity, such as the term gently used. What are the odds there really being honest about that? Does the product only have mild wear and tear, or is it on its last legs? For example, these could just be euphemisms, which means a mild or indirect word or expression substituted for one considered to be too harsh or blunt when referring to something unpleasant or embarrassing. Let me give you an example of that. Using the term passed away or just departed to mean died. How about saying pregnancy termination instead of abortion? Or someone being on the streets instead of just saying they're homeless? Maybe these terms are used to perpetuate lies, such as when a company CEO says he's reducing costs. But more often than not, this turns into layoffs, pay cuts, and a loss of benefits. So we should all think before we doublespeak or say a euphemism or even use an oxymoron. But all this becomes more ominous when politicians, and virtually anyone who wields or attempts to wield power, uses any of these to obfuscate or hide the true meaning of their opinions or intent. While in Tampa just last week, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General of the United States, made a speech in Tampa, Florida, where he stated the following.
And I am operating on the assumption that this country prescribes too many opioids.
Listen again to the first part of that sentence.
I am operating on the assumption.
Whoa, hold it right there. What is an assumption? It's something taken for granted, a supposition. In other words, something that is accepted as true by some or as certain to happen without proof. Without proof. So, substituting the definition of assumption for a better one, Jeff Sessions then said, "I am operating on the supposition, without any proof, that this country prescribes too many opioids." Next in that speech, we heard Jeff Sessions say,
"I mean, people need to take some aspirin sometimes."
Now he seems to be generalizing. What about those people that can't take aspirin, have sustained and chronic pain? Are they, to coin a New York term, shit out of luck? Immediately on hearing the Sessions speech, all I could think of was about that phrase ascribed to Marie Antoinette, when upon learning that the peasants had no bread declared, qu'ils mangeant de la brioche. Upon learning that the peasants had no bread, she said, let them eat cake. Now this quote would reflect the princess's disregard for the peasants, or her poor understanding of their situation. Well, same here. It seems to me that Jeff Sessions has a very poor understanding of the situation for those with medical conditions that cause people to suffer from chronic pain. If they have pain and can't get their opioid pain medications, then let them take aspirin. Also, it's interesting that Mr. Sessions went on to reiterate this by saying,
sometimes you just need to take 2 Buffering or something and go to bed.
You can get through these things.
Two things are really apparent here. One, Mr. Sessions either lives in the past or just can't get his language into the 20th century. Although Buffering still exists to this date as a type of buffered aspirin, no one really uses the term Buffering anymore to mean aspirin. Now, that term, that medicine was popular in the late 1980s and probably went out sometime in the 1990s. It's kind of like saying the cat's meow or jeepers creepers or golly gee. Bob Twillman, the executive director of the Academy of Integrative Pain Management, a national organization that advocates for integrative pain care, stated that the remark reflects a failure to recognize the severity of pain of some patients. And Mr. Twillman went on to say, it's an unconscionable remark that further illustrates how out of touch parts of this administration are with opioids and pain management. And to end this kind of brief discussion of the oxymorons, euphemisms, and doublespeak, let me tell you that Charles Lamb once said, I like a smuggler. He's the only honest thief. Now, sometimes these doublespeak or euphemisms are funny, such as when Yogi Berra once said, not many people go to that restaurant anymore. It's always too crowded. But in the case of Jeff Sessions, nobody's laughing. We need people in power who do not make decisions on assumptions, but on accepted fact based on real research. Let's look at some logic and inductive reasoning. When an argument takes us from premise to conclusion, that follows from those premises only with some degree of probability. Let's take an example then, an example of inductive reasoning. Assume the first two statements are true. The bird in the cornfield is a crow. All crows are black. Therefore, and here comes the conclusion, the bird in the cornfield is black. But I can also use deductive logic. Again, we assume that the statement, all crows are black, is true by observing several crows and concluding that probably all wore black. I use an inductive argument, as in crow number one is black, crow number two is black, crow number three is black, etc. Therefore, all crows are black. If the assumption is wrong, then those statements that depend on the initial assumption may or may not be wrong. Jeff Sessions is wrong here. And remember the old saying, we know what the word assume means. It makes a out of you and me.
For more in Florida-specific news, we have just heard that although the majority of Floridians voted to get medical marijuana state legalized, and that apparently 64% of respondents to a Gallup poll said that marijuana should be legalized for recreational use here in Florida. Advocates who were required to get 766,000 signatures by February 1st to place this on the ballot fell for short of that. This means that the next time recreational marijuana can get on the ballot here in Florida is 2020. So until that time, marijuana will only be available as medical marijuana.
At Southside Medical Center, many patients come because they suffer from chronic low back pain. In many, the initial cause may have been an accident or injury, but others suffer from chronic pain due to non-injury, such as severe arthritis or even congenital or inherited spine problems.
You may be surprised at some of these causes. To name a few, we have pelvic inflammatory disease, which is an infection of the female reproductive organs, herniated disc, sciatica, kidney stones, spinal stenosis, prostatitis, PMS, endometriosis, spinal cord abscesses, ankylosing spondylitis, adhesive arthritis, cervical dysplasia, scoliosis, and kyphosis, multiple myeloma, as well as aortic aneurysm. And the list goes on.
We know that not only does low back pain cause sleep disturbances, but insomnia can also worsen low back pain.
So, what we would like to do is describe the sleep positions that may actually help lessen your back pain and stop the never-ending cycle of back pain and insomnia.
If you've listened to our other radio shows, you might have tuned into a show on the anatomy of the back. Suffice it to say right now that the back is not straight like a rod. There's a natural curve, and this is important to maintain while lying in bed. Now, you can do this by ensuring the head, shoulders, and hips are in alignment and that the back is properly supported.
The best way to do this is usually by sleeping on the back. Unfortunately, many people are uncomfortable sleeping on their back or find it causes them to snore. So we will include in our best positions some that do not include sleeping on the back.
Everyone sleeps differently, so there is a variety of options for people who want to sleep better and reduce their back pain.
You may find that sleeping on the back with knee support helps a lot. So try laying on your back, which evenly distributes your weight over the full length of your body's larger surface.
Not only that, it also minimizes pressure points and ensures good alignment of the head, the neck, and the spine. So try placing a small pillow under the knees to provide additional support and help maintain the natural curve of the spine.
We suggest that you lie flat on your back facing the ceiling and avoid twisting the head sideways. Position a pillow to support the head and neck and place a small pillow under the knees.
You can add extra support by filling in any other gaps between the body and mattress with additional pillows, such as beneath the lower back. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I are now going to continue telling you about best sleep positions for those with low back pain.
Although lying on the side is a popular and comfortable sleeping position, it can pull the spine out of position. And this can strain the lower back. So here is the fix. Place a firm pillow between your knees. What this does is raise the upper leg, thus restoring the natural alignment on the hips, pelvis, and spine.
So to get into this side position, get into bed and carefully roll onto one side. Then position a pillow to support the head and neck. At this point, pull the knees up slightly and place a pillow between them. You can even get extra support by filling in any gaps between the body and mattress with more pillows, especially at the waist.
If you are one who likes sleeping on your belly, you could try hugging a large pillow against your chest and stomach to aid sleep and keep your back aligned.
Now, how about those who like sleeping in a curled-up fetal position? This position may actually help those with herniated discs.
This is because lying on the side with the knees tucked into the chest reduces bending of the spine and helps open up the joints. So if you want to try this position, then get into bed and carefully roll on the one side, then position a pillow to support your head and neck.
Now draw the knees up towards your chest until your back is relatively straight. A variation of sleeping on the belly is to place a pillow under the stomach and hips.
Even though sleeping on your front is considered the worst for back ache, sleeping in this position may benefit people with a herniated disc or a degenerative disc disease. When using this position, you may wish to forgo the pillow. One of the problems with the sleeping on your belly is that your head usually faces to either one side or the other. This twists the spine and places additional stress on the neck, shoulders, and back.
To avoid this, you could try lying face down with a very small pillow or a rolled-up towel to prop up the forehead, allowing room to breathe. Remember that you still need to place a pillow under the stomach.
You may have caught yourself sleeping in a recliner or any reclined position. This can help us with something called isthmic spondylolisthesis. If you really find significant relief is found from resting in a reclined chair, it may be worth investing in an adjustable bed that can be positioned accordingly. You may have recently gone to choose a new pillow, but different pillows may suit different sleeping positions.
A head pillow should maintain the natural posture of the neck and help support the spine. Ideally, it should be comfortable, adaptable to different positions, and keep its overall shape after use. It's also been recommended that pillows should be changed every 12 to 18 months.
If you sleep on your back, you may wish to use a thinner pillow. Raising the head too much can place a strain on the neck and back. There are also thin pillows specifically designed to help the neck. For many, memory foam is a good option as it is firm, but also molds to the shape of the head and neck.
People who prefer to sleep on their sides may want to consider a thicker pillow. For best support, it should fill the space between the neck and the mattress completely. People who sleep on their stomachs should use a thin pillow or maybe no pillow at all. Pushing the head backward can put pressure on the neck. So now we come to the mattresses.
A mattress should be well made, fully supportive, and comfortable. Firm mattresses are often recommended, but there is some evidence to suggest that medium firm may be better for people with long-term lower back pain. If you have wide hips, a softer mattress may be better, while someone with slim hips may opt for a firm one. Remember that though a softer mattress may seem more comfortable, initially it provides less support.
Sinking too deep can cause joints to twist and the spine to come out of its natural alignment. A foam mattress topper can be used to provide additional support to a spring mattress. And you can put a plywood board placed underneath the mattress to increase firmness if necessary.
Most adults need between 7 and 9 hours every day. Although we have recently heard that in an adult, in a relaxed state, free of stress, people will sleep on average 10 and a half hours a day. That is almost the same as a chimpanzee.
From back pain to yoga. Yoga is often recommended for back pain treatments. But what about metabolic syndrome? Never heard of that? No, not yoga. Everybody's probably heard of that. I mean metabolic syndrome. Now, we'll get to the disease itself in just a moment. Some studies have suggested that yoga boosts brain health and cognition, as well as improves thyroid problems and relieves the symptoms of depression.
A new study which has been published in the Scandinavian Journal of Medicine and Science and Sports and led by Dr. Parko M. Siu from the University of Hong Kong in China investigated the effect of yoga on cardiometabolic health. The results not only found that it benefits people with metabolic syndrome, but they also revealed the mechanism behind such benefits.
First of all, yoga decreases inflammatory response. Metabolic syndrome is a condition frequently associated with type 2 diabetes and heart disease. In the United States, it's estimated that approximately 34% of the adult population live with this condition. Most, of course, don't even know it. The researchers randomly assigned 97 participants with metabolic syndrome and high normal blood pressure to either a control group or a yoga group.
Participants in the control group were not given any intervention but were contacted monthly to monitor their health status. Participants in the yoga group underwent a yoga training program with 3 one-hour yoga sessions weekly for 1 year.
The scientists also monitored the patient's serum for so-called adipokines, or signaling proteins that are released by the fat tissue that tell the immune system to release either an anti-inflammatory or inflammatory response.
The results demonstrated that 1 year yoga training decreased pro-inflammatory adipokines and increases anti-inflammatory adipokines in adults with metabolic syndrome and high normal blood pressure. These findings do seem to support the beneficial role of yoga in managing metabolic syndrome.
Thus, the results of the study suggest that yoga could be a worthwhile lifestyle intervention that could decrease inflammation and help people with metabolic syndrome to manage their symptoms. Now, metabolic syndrome is really a cluster of conditions.
These include increased blood pressure, high blood sugar, excess body fat around the waist, and abnormal cholesterol or triglyceride levels. These occur together and increase your risk of heart disease, stroke, and diabetes.
Having just one of these conditions doesn't mean you have metabolic syndrome. However, any of these conditions increase your risk of serious disease. Having more than one, these might increase your risk even more.
Most of the disorders associated with metabolic syndrome have no symptoms, although a large waist circumference is a visible sign. If your blood sugar is very high, you might have signs and symptoms of diabetes. including increased thirst and urination, fatigue, and blurred vision. It is time to see your physician if you have even one of the symptoms that we have mentioned.
Metabolic syndrome is closely linked to overweight and inactivity, and it's also linked to a condition called insulin resistance. As you know, normally your digestive system breaks down the foods you eat into sugar, called glucose, in its most simple form.
The body produces a hormone called insulin that helps sugar enter your cells to be used as fuel. However, in people with insulin resistance, cells don't respond normally to insulin, and glucose cannot enter the cells as easily. As a result, glucose levels in your blood rise despite your body's attempt to control the glucose by churning out more and more insulin.
Your risk of metabolic syndrome increases with age, and Mexican Americans appear to be at the greatest risk of developing metabolic syndrome in the United States.
We have already mentioned obesity as cause. You are more likely to have metabolic syndrome if you had diabetes during pregnancy or if you have a family history of type 2 diabetes.
Other disease entities, well, your risk of metabolic syndrome is higher if you've ever had cardiovascular disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or even polycystic ovary syndrome. And having metabolic syndrome can increase your risk of developing diabetes. So you need to make lifestyle changes to control your excess weight, which, as we said, can lead to insulin resistance, and then you might develop diabetes.
So here are some of the guidelines for diagnosing metabolic syndrome. According to guidelines used by the National Institutes of Health, you have metabolic syndrome if you have three or more of the following traits or are taking medication to control them: large waist circumference, a waistline that measures at least 35 inches for women and 40 inches for men, triglyceride level above 150 milligrams per deciliter, high density lipoprotein or HDL, cholesterol less than 40 milligrams per deciliter in men or less than 50 milligrams deciliter in women. Remember that this is the good cholesterol. Increased blood pressure over 130 over 85 is another factor in metabolic syndrome, as is elevated fasting blood sugar greater than 100 milligrams per deciliter.
So what can you do to prevent it?
Being physically active, 30 or more minutes of moderate intensity exercise, such as brisk walking daily, lose weight if you are overweight, and eat healthily.
The DASH diet and the Mediterranean diets, like many healthy eating plans, limit unhealthy fats and emphasize fruits, vegetables, fish, and whole grains. And these are the recommended diets at this time.
Oh, and stopping smoking. Smoking cigarettes worsen the health consequences of metabolic syndrome.
Managing stress, physical activity, meditation, yoga, and other programs can help you handle stress and improve your emotional and physical health. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.
WBOB AM 600, The Answer.